Back at it, man. Saints and Pioneers. What's up, Jesse Crow?
What's up?
Hey. I feel like we've started every episode off like this lately. It's been a minute.
Yeah.
Our schedules have not worked together. In fact, last time we did this, tested out the new technology that worked.
It did. It worked so swimmingly.
So we have some interviews down the road once we get done with our Western Theology series, which is coming to a close. I think we've got just a couple of more chapters after today, but today is an exciting one. We get to talk about the clergyman, the pastor role. So we'll get into that in a minute. What's been going on with you, man?
Let's see here. I've been working on cars a lot lately. It's pretty frustrating.
Yeah.
But I'm getting better at it.
Yeah. And that, there's nothing more, I think, than test your relationship with God than working on something like that.
So Sunday morning, mm-hmm. I got up and so I have three cars, mm-hmm. you know, and I have a Dodge Caravan. Mm-hmm. My wife has a pretty nice Honda Pilot. Mm-hmm. That's kind of her family car. And then I have a 01 Tahoe.
Right.
That it's just been beat to heck, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't have a dash cover.
Well, it's got a dash, it's just a frame.
It's just got the frame of the dash. Yeah. And I tried to take the dash out cuz you know those old Tahoes they'll crack.
Mhm.
And I tried to pull it out and broke it.
Yeah, it's just a frame.
So now it's just a frame. And everybody keeps telling me, man, when are you going to fix the dash? And I'm like, I am eventually.
Yeah, yeah.
But that Tahoe is a solid rock.
Chevrolet should have done a commercial down that, like a rock.
They should have.
Yeah.
They missed an opportunity.
Yeah.
But I had the transmission rebuilt. Jerry's Transmission in Hueytown. I highly recommend it.
Yeah. Not a sponsor, but we do have a sponsor we'll talk about in just a second.
Yeah, let's talk about that later. But it hardly leaks any oil. It's incredible. This thing's got almost 300,000 miles on it.
Yeah.
And its thing drives. It looks like crap, but it drives like a dream.
Yeah.
So Sunday morning, the starter's been going out on it. So I have to, like, sometimes I keep a pry bar and a hammer.
Yeah.
In the cab with me, right?
Right.
So when I get somewhere, and this is redneck right here, okay? Yeah. I had taken the you know, you got that inside the fender, you mm-hmm. got that guard that keeps the water and stuff.
Yeah.
What is it called?
Inner fender.
Yeah, yeah, I had taken that off for something else.
Yeah.
And never put it back on, which worked great because I could get out, like, when it wouldn't crank.
Yeah.
So anybody out there who, you know, doesn't work on cars and doesn't work on pieces of crap cars may not know this, but if your starter starts to go out, you can tap it.
Right.
And it'll start running.
Yeah. Just tap it in.
So if it just tap it in, give it a little tappy. So I get out of the car, like if it won't crank, I get out of the car, I grab my pry bar, my hammer, and I go in there and I just give it a good.
Yeah.
And I get back in there. And I've had people watch me do this and they're just looking at me like.
Yeah.
Like, what's poor wrong guy. With this guy?
Yeah. That takes me to another movie.
Wait, let me finish.
Yeah.
So that I brought this up to brag on myself. So let me do that real quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sunday morning, I get there and it got to where my starter would not even do that. Like it got to the point where it would hardly, I'd have to beat the crap out of it. It's got dents all in it.
Yeah.
So Sunday morning, I get up and we had to go in two different directions, me and my wife, because mm-hmm. my son plays AAU basketball. He had a tournament to go to. I had to go to church.
Yeah.
So she's like, well, how are you going to get to church? Because your van's up on block because I'm waiting on a wheel bearing.
Right.
And your Tahoe won't crank.
Right.
So I'm like,
yeah, because that's a long walk.
I got to go out and put that starter on. So I went out, jacked that sucker up, pulled the old one off, threw it back on, washed my hands, and go to church.
Yeah.
Now, that's badass.
Yeah, right there. It is. Hey, it takes me to the other movie, one of my favorites. I know we're Back to the Future guys, but probably my first love, my first favorite movie was Karate Kid.
Oh, yeah.
You remember he had to always help his mom push the car off like they'd pop the clutch.
Yeah.
He goes into the nice neighborhood to pick up Allie on the date, and car won't start.
Right.
This picture, his, like, her snooty parents up there, like, my God. But anyway, good stuff. But yeah, that tests your relationship with God.
It really will.
I've been in a period of things. My wife has threatened to take away every pocket knife I own because the last two projects that I've worked on, I knew in my mind, this is the definition probably of ignorance. I knew in my mind certain situations that I was doing, like I needed to go get like a pair of like wire cutters or something like that. And I was like, I got my pocket knife.
Right.
I've cut my hand very badly the last two times. He's like, okay, let's try to make it this week. Like I'm a child. And I will say today is Friday and knock on this wood table. So far, I've not cut myself. But this one, I know the listening audience can't see this. I'm showing Jesse my pinky. I had my hand up out of the way, and I cut it, and it went right into my finger, and it bled so much. And we've had it forever here at our shop. I think it's actually made for gunshots.
Yeah.
Like the powder that you pack in something to get it to quit bleed. It's like called stop bleed.
Yeah.
That stuff works. That's the first time. Like I could not get it to quit bleeding. And I packed it full of that stuff and then had to wrap it finally. But, yeah.
See,
no cuts this week.
My deal with pocket knives, I break the tips off because I pry on something inevitably.
Yeah.
Now, this one, compliments of you, the true knife people,
right.
I have yet to break the tip off.
Yeah. Well, this year during turkey season, I had loaned Ned and Jameson. Jameson's my son-in-law, Ned, his dad, that we hunt together. And, yeah, speaking of turkey, like they kicked our rear this year. My son-in-law got one.
Yeah.
But, I didn't get to go a lot this year. And if you know anything about turkey hunting, when the birds are quiet, it's very difficult.
Yeah.
It's difficult anyway. But,
got to kill them coyotes, man.
Yeah, coyotes. But they were making fun of my pocket knife because it was my everyday carry had gotten really dull.
Yeah.
And it would barely cut just anything.
Right.
And so I showed them, I got the sharpest knife that I had, and then that's when I cut myself. It's like, it is sharp.
Speaking of the outdoors,
new sponsor, friend of the program. And I tell you, I love these guys. Anybody that you use their products, like you want it to be good stuff, right?
Right.
This company's called N1 Outdoors. If you want to go visit their website, we actually have a coupon code for you as well. It is the letter N, the number one, and outdoors.com. So N1, outdoors.com. And what N1 Outdoors is it's simply that, everything N1, you know, hunting, fishing, hiking, working out, whatever, just encouraging people to get in the outdoors. I love their products, got tons of shirts, hats, all kind of stuff like that. But some stuff I want to show you this too. If you're into hunting and especially archery, they have these knock tuning wraps where you can actually dial in each arrow that you shoot and get it actually when you go through the target paper. You want that crisp, clean, like bullet hole almost.
Right. Yeah.
If you notice, like if you take just a normal arrow and shoot it, it kind of, when it hits the paper, it almost makes a mark and it'll like go up or it'll go up and to the left.
Right.
Well, each arrow has a tougher part of the spine. And as you find that, it's a marking system. Super simple to do. And man, you can get those arrows shooting crisp and clean. I want to set yours up this year that way. But those are in there. They're called the Intune wraps. But anyway, if you go to n1outdoors.com, use the coupon code Keith, gets you 15% off your whole order. So we appreciate those guys being a part of what we do. And the very best thing about them, it is a Christian-owned company.
Right on.
In fact, some of their shirts, one of them I really love and want to get soon, is one that's got a hunting scene on it, but it's the word Dominion. And it's the verse from Genesis about us having dominion over.
Right on.
And stuff. So we appreciate those guys supporting what we do and doing what they do, supplying great products and not ashamed to share their faith and the love of the outdoors. So we appreciate those guys. And also, Jerry's Transmission in Hewittown, Alabama.
There you go.
Not an official sponsor, but great, great people if you have transmission needs. And if you need starter tips, just reach out to Jesse Crow.
There you go.
All right. Well, Western theology, we're back in it. And as we had kind of teased, I think the last episode when you were on the phone, we're talking about the clergyman. You ever heard the old saying, man of the cloth?
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty simple why that is. I never understood it. But when I first answered the call into ministry, there was two phrases that I hated. It was the man of the cloth. And then when you're young, I don't know if you ever had this, but you'd get people, and they didn't mean it disrespectfully, but it'd be preacher boy. I don't know if you ever heard anybody do that.
Yeah.
I was like, man, I ain't no boy. I'll show you. You know. But anyway, they meant it well. You're young in the ministry. But man of the cloth, thinking of like some of the priestly garb and different things like that we don't. I guess the only man of the cloth I have is I sported one of my new N1 outdoor shirts last Sunday, but be anything from a Johnny Cash or a Bob Marley or whatever. So that's my cloth that I wear, and same with you. But I want to say something uncomfortable to start with.
Okay.
Because I know mine and your heart on this whole idea of pastor.
Mm-hmm.
I am a pastor talking to another pastor. And I know we like don't view ourselves in that light. But you're a worship pastor. You know, as far as with our faith family that we gather with, the church at Southside, and I believe we do pastoring in other places. You know, we've gone and done ministry tons of places. Again, in fact, was talking even before we came on air about another opportunity to do that. We go and share the Southside story. You know, go in other ministry situations and everything. But, you know, we don't necessarily view ourselves in the light of that as pastor. I mean, I go by Keith, you go by Jesse. Although I do find it funny. And we were at an event not too long ago. We went and spoke at a youth group. I don't know if you even picked up on this. But we went to speak at a youth group that they were bringing their youth out to visit with us. And I shared a little bit of the Southside story, what to expect. You led in worship and shared from your heart as well on things that go on out there. And they introduced us as Brother Keith and Brother Jesse. I don't know. Did you pick up? Okay. There was nothing wrong with it. I don't mean that as any kind of slider word. That's, you know, title of respect.
Church or, speak.
Yeah, church speak, title of respect. But I even had a guy, I don't know that I told you this, at Southside, one of our regulars. And it was just out of nowhere. He walked up to me because I've addressed this issue out there. And I promise there's more on the reason that we feel this. It's not trying to be pretentious or like, don't call me Brother Keith or Pastor Keith or,
right.
I get called, Reverend. There's a guy out there that calls me Mr. Speaker. I don't know if you've ever heard, a friend of ours, Mike, sits up on top of the hill. Hey, Mr. Speaker, Reverend. I love the Dodgers, and I always, like, I'll wear an L.A. hat sometimes, and I've got one guy that calls me Reverend L.A., you know, just all these nicknames. But I had this guy, he said, why don't you like to be called Pastor? And I said, well, it's not that I don't, you know, like that term, or I'm not trying to hide from that term. It's just, but, like, I'm just like you. Like, I'm Keith, and I won't say his name, don't have his permission, but, you know, it's like, we've taken that position, I think, and unfairly put too much power and authority on that. Because if anybody other than my wife in this world is probably you, could tell our listeners, like, I don't have all my stuff together, right? Like, I mean, I've documented even on this podcast, there's times I call you in the midst of things and like, man, I don't even know that God's real. You know, the struggle with faith and all of those things. And I'm happy to say, like, I firmly believe even in those moments, but I resonate with the scripture sometimes where the guy goes to Jesus.
Just to clarify, you do know God's real, but sometimes you struggle with
that feeling. Yeah. But the prayer that resonates with me is the guy in scripture, and I can't remember all the context of the story offhand, but he goes to Jesus and he says, Lord, this is one sentence in your Bible. Lord, I believe, help my unbelief.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if there's not a verse that describes me probably better, you know, that's there. Because let's just be honest, man, when life gets tough And we start to do those questions, why me? And, and why is this, you know, life so hard and all those things. It's like, is this even really real?
And faith is not a, putting your faith, we you know, in Christian speak, again, we talk about putting your faith and trust in Jesus. Look, I got to put my faith and trust in Jesus every day. Like it has to start, it has to recalibrate every day. We act like it's this once and for all thing, but a walk of faith requires recalibration, reorientation every day.
Yeah.
That's why we have to walk with Jesus. That's why we have to spend time in prayer. We have to spend time in solitude, in the Word. That's why we have to do those things. Because it's a constant reorientation, recalibration every day.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, where I think there's grace to that, we literally have a disciple of Jesus that is, you know, wasn't called, I don't think they called him that back then, but later was known as Doubting Thomas. He literally walked with God in the flesh. In fact, when he's told, like, hey, he's raised from the dead, he's like, man, get out of here. Like, you know, until I see the nail prints in his hand, like, I'm not going to believe. You know, and this was a guy that walked with him and saw him feed the 5,000, touch a leper, and the spots disappear. Which, by the way, what a scene on The Chosen. We ain't talked about The Chosen today. So,
and I'll tell you, on The Chosen, Thomas's story will break your heart. Stunning the
extra,
way they wrote
extra
that.
Extra biblical stuff there, but the way they write that in, and it is, that's a beautiful story. But so anyway, there's some of that, but this is the reason I even bring this up before we get into discussing what Wes Seeliger talks about with the clergy. I want to say this lovingly, and I pray that if you hit this point and it offends you, it makes you mad, it brings up something in you, I pray that you'll fight through that, like continue to listen, because we are not at a spot where we're disrespecting the office of pastor.
Right.
It is a genuine calling, not for everyone. You know, that's you and God wrestle with that. But I want to say this statement before we get in, kind of already alluded to it, of the sometimes elevated role that we put on pastor. And I say that's going to make some people mad, upset, some kind of feeling, is because most people love their pastors, right? I mean,
right.
Like that's, you know, a faith family that you're involved in. They love them until they don't, right? We know, like, you and I both experienced that, where we had people that were all about, you know, air quotes here, Pastor Keith and Pastor Jesse, that are not so much about Pastor Keith and Pastor Jesse right now. And that comes with the territory. But most people are in that love area of their pastor. But like, here's where I mean by this. They may not tell you this, but your pastor is just like you. They struggle. And I say that, maybe even more so of a struggle because of the weight of responsibility that they feel. And I would even say that from a personal standpoint. I don't know how you feel. Sometimes I put too much pressure on myself to live in this standard. And pastors are called to a higher standard. There's scripture that backs that up. But there's also just major amounts of grace.
I think
you're not
leaders in general.
Yeah, yeah.
Are called to higher standards.
Yeah, absolutely.
So even that is a little more broad than we actually make it to be.
Yeah.
So if you're a leader in your church, guess what?
Yeah.
You're on deck.
That's right.
You're called to that standard too.
Yeah. So but the end of the day, a pastor is just simply a shepherd, but we're not the shepherd.
Right.
You know, we're pointing people to the shepherd. We're shepherding a flock of people, a family, a gathering, whatever you want to call it. You know, a church with the little c, you know, the Church of Jesus Christ is much bigger than your faith family. And while we're talking, I know we're not talking about the church, the same way people can elevate their pastor or leader or whatever, they can elevate their church to that same area with God.
Right.
And there is nothing wrong. Like, you should be in love with your faith family. You should love where you're a part of. I would even venture to say, if you don't, it may be time to make some changes there, or, you know, it may be your time to move on to somewhere where you are comfortable and love that family. But just as we can elevate a pastor, we can elevate our church, faith, family, and it be more about, like in our case, the church at Southside, more than it can be about connecting people that we meet there with mm-hmm. the shepherd.
Right.
And so if that offends you, if that hurts you, wells up something of like, wait a minute, what did he say? I shouldn't, you know, just hang with us. Don't rush to judgment on that. We love your pastor. We pray for them. We pray for all the pastors we know. And man, we know some great ones. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got some that are like, been influential in our lives, of course. We know some that are in other ministries that, like, we would say, man, I would sit under their teaching, support them, mm-hmm. serve. And then, unfortunately, we know some that's like, yeah, I don't, you know, I couldn't be down with how they do things. Mm-hmm. And that's, we know full well there's people out there listening, like, well, I kind of feel that way about you, you know, mm-hmm. And that's okay too. But let's hang tight kind of with that thought. So if you're at that point, just, I promise, hang with us and that'll probably alleviate, a little bit. So if you remember, we're in this, it's that settler theology, pioneer theology, life on the trail, all of this stuff. So we'll jump right in settler theology, the clergyman is compared to a bank teller. And to remind you of that, you know, we got into that talking about the bank and how the church could be viewed as that.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy's a suit and tie, neat and clean. And if you remember last episode, a deacon or bishop, whatever they wanted to call it, was kind of like the bank president, right? Yeah. Just in charge of things, in charge of the monotonous day-to-day. But the suit and tie, neat and clean, clean shaven. I loved this quote. Because it says a teller in this, you know, settler theology is a settler's settler. And it says, Mayor God calls the teller, but 75% of the clergyman's job as a teller is bookkeeping.
Mm.
Just doing the work of the church.
Right.
You know, keeping the machine going. And I just want to say this, if you're a pastor friend of us listening, I don't envy the pastors that are in positions of, especially somebody taking on a new role with a new church family. Most of them enter into a machine that's already been rolling for 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
Ways are set. Most of them are in debt.
Right.
We know statistics about how people are leaving the church mm-hmm. more at a rapid rate than ever before.
Yep.
And so you go into these places and you look at the books and you're $1 million in debt. People are leaving. People are not giving like they used to. People don't attend as much as they used to. It's got to be a maddening situation.
Very disheartening, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're in that spot, man, one, I know Jesse's heart in this enough to know we didn't talk about this ahead of time, but reach out to us. We'll be glad to pray with you, listen, don't have to guard what you say.
You can vent to us. We won't tell anyone.
That's right. And so pastors need that.
They
like,
do.
I want to tell you, like, I've got that in you. You've got that in me. We've got other brothers and sisters as well in our lives that we can vent to, that there is no fear of, you know, judgment. Like, I mean, you know, we won't get into details, but you and I have shared things with each other.
Secrets.
There you go. Anybody else out there have any secrets they want to tell? But we've shared things with each other that, you know, it's like I haven't always had that freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you share the wrong thing, you know, air quote here, the wrong thing in somebody's eyes is the wrong thing. Then it's almost a disqualifying thing as pastor because you have struggles just like everybody else. But the reality is we're human. We've got the same struggles that every other person has ever had.
Yeah.
But what do you think of this idea of your typical pastor? Is that kind of what you see, the clean shaven, the suit and tie, kind of a timid version almost of maybe the responsibilities of that job, the headaches of that job. Is that typically what you think of when you think of a traditional pastor? Or?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think that they're now, I will say a lot, you know, a lot of, like you said this before recently or a few minutes ago, a lot of the pastors I know, you know, and they're not that way.
Right.
But I think that is the sort of the image you get, the penny loafer wearing, you know, guy who's always at least in a sweater vest, you know, in his office, handling church business, you know, taking a call here, counseling a person here. And there are some pastors I'm thinking about right now that I don't really have a strong connection with that are that way. And, you can tell, I don't know, every pastor I've ever met like that, you can, you just get a sense. They put off this vibe that, they're overwhelmed. They're struggling.
Yeah.
They're isolated.
Yeah. I was lonely came lonely, to mind.
Yeah.
It's a lonely job for a lot of guys. I'm grateful we're not in that spot. And I would encourage you, if you are a pastor, minister listening, and you do feel alone, man, get you some good community that you can be honest with that won't judge.
Right.
I mean, if you're having doubts or if you're having whatever, a bad day, and you just need to vent, that's an invaluable resource. And can I just say the penny loafer thing? Have you ever seen anybody pull off the look with actually a couple pennies in them bad boys?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. If you're going to have penny loafers and don't
remember old Andy, he said, I lost a penny in my penny loafers today, Oscar.
Yes. I mean, if you're going to pull off the look of penny loafers, you might as well go all out.
You got to put that penny in there.
Yeah.
Was that slot made for the penny?
I think so. I don't know why.
I need to know the history on the penny loafer.
Yeah. I'm gonna guess. You can Google this out there. I've never looked this up, but I just wonder if the penny, you know, the old saying about finding a penny on heads.
Mm-hmm.
If you're supposed to put them heads up, and that's like two shoes of good luck for you. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, hey.
Man, you put them penny loafers on with some of them sans belt pants that don't need a belt. Come on, son.
Listen, I don't know a guy who wears penny loafers. Now, this is my experience. I don't mean to to be harsh here, but I don't know a dude who wears penny loafers who actually has calluses on his hands.
Yeah.
Very few.
True.
I'm telling you. Not that every guy has to have calluses on his hands.
Right.
But I'm just saying, most of the guys that are in my corner,
yeah,
that are my ride or die,
yeah,
that I want to have them with me when the shit goes down.
Right.
They got calluses on their hands.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
That is true. And cuts from pocket knives and stuff like that. Yeah. Ain't no penny loafers here, bud.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, nothing wrong with penny loafers. If you're wearing penny, don't be offended either. You wear them, baby, but just put them pennies in it. Don't you wear no penniless loafers.
Don't you wear no penniless loafers.
Anyway, so we've given penny loafers a good bit of airtime here. Next quote, number one rule of a teller. Again, the teller being the clergyman. By all means, do not, under any circumstance, offend the customers.
Oh.
Man, there's so many pastors living in that right now.
Yeah.
Even having to judge how they teach, what they teach, probably what they wear.
Right.
You know, man, I can't go out there without my penny loafers today. They expect it. You know,
man.
But don't offend the customers. What about that?
That hurts my heart. I'm literally thinking of stories right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have literally seen guys that I know have come up in the ministry who were great men of God now.
Mm-hmm.
Who have had some little old blue-haired lady stick their finger in their face and tell them what they can say and what they can't.
Yeah.
And, like, I've been in those environments, you know. Like I've been a worship leader where people come up and said, oh, you can't play that way, or you can't sing that, or you shouldn't say that, or whatever. I'll give you
one. Music's just too darn loud.
It's just too darn loud, yeah. I had one experience, and I'm a worship pastor, I would say, but I'm not a pastor of the text, I guess.
I say you are more than you realize.
Well, maybe so, yeah. But I played at a church, in Monroeville, Alabama. I think it was Monroeville. And I brought my band with me. Mm-hmm. I got invited to do a youth Sunday. Mm. And I'll just tell you, I've had people call me, and if you're listening and you called me, hey, can you come lead worship? I probably turned you down because mm-hmm. I don't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. I just don't.
Yeah.
I'll tell you why. Because I'm only going to play. I'm only going to usually my role is I'm backing up the pastor, whoever's doing the speaking. Mm-hmm. And usually that's you. Mm-hmm. So unless you're there, I'm usually not. Mm-hmm. And I got some other people that I'll do that for. But people right. say just a random, hey, we want you to come. I just don't do that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to get into all the details of why, but that it's just, I just don't.
Yeah.
But I played at this church. It was a youth Sunday. Mm-hmm. And so it was drums and guitar and bass and yeah. electric guitar. You know, it was like it was going to be somewhat loud.
Right.
You know? And this old dude came up to me and he grabbed me by the arm. Mm. Now, first of all, I'm not a very big guy, mm-hmm. but when another man that I don't know grabs onto me, my first instinct
yeah.
is to rearrange his face.
Right.
Like knock his jaw off.
Yeah.
And I had to fight the urge to knock this old man on the ground, but I did not do that.
Let me add a caveat.
What's that?
In Jesus' name.
In Jesus' name. Now,
yeah, same here.
I really wanted to come from down under mm-hmm. and knock this old guy out, but I didn't do that.
Right.
Okay.
Good for you.
I stopped and I was like, whoa, man, what's up? And he's like, you need to tone it down. Mm-hmm. He was like grab yeah. me by the arm. And I'm like, well, at this point, he's a fragile old dude. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, at this point, it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
You know? Well, I really wanted to just get louder. Mm-hmm. I mean, he really, you know.
Yeah.
But I didn't do that either.
Yeah.
And I'm like, look, I'm at this random church in Podunk, Monroeville.
Yeah.
I ain't going to serve nobody by, yeah. you know, yeah. they don't want me here. They right. don't want me being loud. I don't even yeah. think the kids wanted me there.
Yeah.
You know, I don't yeah. know. I mean, yeah. I never got invited back. Surprise.
Right. Just too darn loud.
I was just too darn loud. So yeah. I told the band, go sit down. I played like one more song and then we went outside. I think we just went outside and waited.
You know what,
until
that old man, he's sitting there. He leaned over to his wife, old Betsy. He said, Betsy, words like that have never been sung in this church. He said, I bet that old boy ain't got the faith of God up there.
Right.
I bet you. Yeah.
Got the
yeah.
faith of God.
But yeah, we've been there, man.
Yeah.
So the teller, by all means, don't offend the customer. And then think about this line. His job is to please two bosses at one time.
Mm.
The bank customers, which are your church members, and the bank president, which are the deacons and personnel committees.
Amen.
You notice somebody missing from that. It's God, right? Mm-hmm. Like that almost becomes, or can become, not every pastor and not even every pastor that wears penny loafers.
Right.
I swear people are going to think we got a problem with penny loafers now. We do not. In fact, I may go buy some.
I was going to say
let's
that. I'm going to go buy some and wear them for a week
let's
just to
it.
Prove that I'm not biased towards. Yeah.
Let's yeah. do it. So, and I will say this. I'm going to go off subject for just a second. You just gave me an idea a little bit ago. We need to have an episode of Saints and Pioneers of some of our stories that went just horribly wrong at places that we've gone. I know we got a lot of
I got
yeah.
a ton.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
I was thinking of one. I'll save it. But I was thinking of one that when you said it.
We need to do a funny one.
Yeah.
Of just stupid stuff.
Well, I got you one. It was a youth night I went to. And the band, I'll tease it with this. The band come up. It's like, we got a new one for you tonight. It was not new. And it was almost like they acted like they came up with it. But I'll share it with you later after the air. And then we'll talk about that on the episode. But pleasing the two bosses at one time is sad to me as well. I have been a part of places like this next statement. If he thinks and tries to implement new ways, the bank could run better. Again, the bank being the church.
Right.
Quote, we've never done things that way at this bank before.
Mm.
Man, how many good ideas, you know, have been squashed just because we've never done it that way. Or we've always done it this way, you know. So you come in, like I've told you this story before, and I definitely wouldn't name the name of the place, but I had a guy come by my office one day and they were looking for a pastor at his church. And he says, man, I really feel led, like you should put in a resume. And I kindly looked at him and said, well, I really feel led like not to. And he asked me, he just kind of laughed. He said, well, why is that? And I said, well, and I called him my name. I said, you know me. I said, you know where I'm at now. I said, two things. I said, one, I'm right where I'm supposed to be. Like, yeah. I'm not interested. That's the main. Number two, I was like, I promise you, y'all would fire me in 2 weeks.
Right.
He said, well, why? I said, because I know your church's history. I know when people have come in, tried to change things or do, and it's like, y'all need some changes.
Right.
And like, I would be the face of that, you know, wrong, right, whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would try to do that as a team. But if I come in and tried to implement and say, this thing you've been doing for 50 years that five people come to, that's mm-hmm. not working.
Right.
It's a dead horse. You know, shoot it, put it out of its misery for sure. Yeah. Move on, burn it. And you know what? He kind of looked at me. He's like, you're right.
Yeah.
You know, that was the thing. It's like they were in a place that, you know, just that was the way. And I think that's been the beauty of one of the beautiful things about the church at Southside is we literally started with a blank piece of paper. There is no.
Yeah.
We always did it this way or whatever. It's,
you know. It's funny. I was just thinking of this. I've gotten a handful of people since I left my, you know, a lot of people know this if you listen to this, that I was a part of a church plant years ago with my buddy Mike Skelton. Mm-hmm. And since I left that church, or well, the church folded, it mm-hmm. dissolved. Since I've left that church, I've had a handful of people come to me and ask me, hey man, you need to, our church is looking for a worship pastor, you should apply.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, there's a couple of them I just didn't even respond to because I'm like, oh, man, I don't want to do that. Yeah. But yeah. The people that have cornered me or whatever said, no, man, you really need to, because they need you to come in here and shake it up. Mm. Like they want yeah. me to come in there and shake. And I'm like, so you want me to apply to your church mm-hmm. who you know is going to hate me
mm-hmm.
so I can like put my financial security on the line
yep.
and go there and piss everybody off yeah. and then get kicked out. Is that what you want from me?
Right.
Like the, it's almost like this idea of, cause like these places that you're talking about, you're not going to change their mind.
Mm-mm.
You're not going to go in there and shake things up.
It's going to take a serious act of the Holy Spirit.
Yeah. And first of all, it's like in my mind, I'm thinking, I don't change people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus does.
Right.
But I don't.
Yeah.
I don't change people's hearts.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus does.
Right.
But Jesse doesn't.
Yeah.
And so it's like, that's always frustrating to me because it's like, I get what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost like there's this not even a holy sort of rebellious mm-hmm. thing that they want me to join them on.
Right.
You know, and it's just like, dude, come on.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I would say to that person, be like, okay, so what have you tried to do to shake things up?
Right.
Like, what has God led you to do?
Oh, you want me to do it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to get behind me and go, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. What he said. Anyway. Well, so we've all probably seen that, and I want to go to the pioneer theology, which if you haven't caught on yet, the settler theology is what typically would be a religious, you know, spirit, and then freedom in the pioneering and life on the trail. And so pioneering theology is what we aim for. We don't always get that, but that's what we aim for. And so I know you'll remember me saying maybe the spot that offended you, that we put too much emphasis, power, in the position of power of a pastor. But yes, it is a calling. It's important. But we put too much on it. Mm-hmm. And the reason being, I want you to listen to, again, settler theology is this bank teller. Pioneer theology is viewed as so important. He's represented as a cook. And I love it. I'm telling you, even the illustrations of this book, like the old priest that wrote this book, he did the drawings, like the cartoon illustrated drawings. And
yeah.
So one, it's a less than 100-page book, and it's got cartoons in it. So that is the depth.
My kind of book.
That is the depth of my reading stuff. The cook. And I want to remind you that the Holy Spirit was compared to the buffalo hunter. And this is what it says about the cook. The cook's job is simply to dish up what the buffalo hunter has provided.
Mm.
Boy, yeah. Doesn't that make it simple? You know,
and like the buffalo hunter is the spirit.
Yeah,
it's the Holy Spirit.
This wild, woolly, and so
yeah.
He does the work. You simply take what the buffalo hunter has already done,
right?
And you take that word and you try your best, just like any cook would.
Yeah,
yeah, to serve it up. Yeah, I mean, there's all kind of things a good cook can do with, you know, seasonings and marinades and all that preparation for sure. But at the end of the day, it's a cook.
Yeah.
You know, you're simply serving what the buffalo hunter has already provided. The word's already there. It's like the old nothing new under the sun. It's like you can jazz up a message. You can, you know, add personal stories. You can do all this stuff that, yes, is engaging and helps and all that. But the main idea of is serving the meat the buffalo hunter has brought. It's like, here it is.
Yeah.
That's it. It's simply, and I think if you're a pastor, and more so in a pastor role, or you might could, you know, even take this like to a Sunday school teacher, youth pastor, you know, the ones with predominantly that teaching roles. If you take that from the idea of you're really not in charge of anything.
Right.
Yes, you've got this calling to shepherd and to steward, you know, the family that God's given you to help lead. But by the way, I'll even say this, that shouldn't be on just you leading.
Right.
One man, one woman should not have that kind of power, that kind of seat at the table. Like, there's one man that has that, and that's Jesus Christ. Like, he's the head of the church.
And I'll tell you something, too. Like, if you want to do a little test, call your pastor right now and ask him what God's saying. Because I can tell you right now, this is what I love about what you're just saying. Mm-hmm. So what I love about... with the exception of you, including you, there are two other people that are coming to mind right now.
Mm-hmm.
Joel Frederick, mm-hmm. Mike Skelton.
Yeah.
Because I've sat under all three of y'all.
Mm-hmm.
And our conversations, whenever they would, I remember back in the day when me and Joel was prepared, we used to travel a good mm-hmm. bit, and he would speak and I would lead worship. Yep. And he would always... Whenever we would prep for those, it would always start with, this is what God's saying.
Mm.
This is what God's revealing. Mike Skelton the same way. Yeah. You and I, conversations. Mm-hmm. You know, I can remember back in the day with Mike, you know, we had so many service preps on the Cahaba River fly fishing.
Yeah.
This is what God's saying. This is what I feel like God's saying.
Yeah.
How many times have me and you sat riding in your truck, hunting, mm-hmm. Hunting together, or sitting at a Mexican restaurant, drinking water.
You can like, say it. You can say it.
You know, like sitting by your pool at your house or whatever. Man, this
drinking
is what I.
More water.
This is what I feel like God. Yeah, yeah, drinking more water. This is what I feel like God is saying.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And dude, I'm tell you, man, like that's inspiring. You know, mm-hmm. It's like. That's the thick of it. You know, you think of a cook in the kitchen with that towel over his shoulder. He's got you know, an apron on that's all dirty with food, and he's sauteing here, and he's throwing spices here, and he's marinating this, and he's back and forth, and it's like in his mind he's thinking, man, people are gonna love this,
mm-hmm.
or people are going to be, people are, this is going to challenge people.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is going, this
might
gonna
make
push
them sick.
This is going, this yeah. is going to push their palate. You know, this is going to, man, mm-hmm. wait till they experience this, you know, that man, that's what you want in mm-hmm. somebody leading a church, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I would even add this, if you called your pastor right now and asked, what is God saying? And he's offended at that, then that's a telltale right there.
Cause I can tell you right now, the people that I just mentioned, you, including you,
mm-hmm.
It's Roger Patterson would be another one. Like, mm-hmm. What's God saying? Oh man, like, dude, let's go get coffee. Let's. Mm-hmm. It's you have stepped into a big conversation.
Mm-hmm. You and I had that before we came on here today.
We absolutely did. Yeah,
situation
and
you had.
That's kingdom stuff, man.
Yeah.
Like. If you don't have, man, that ought to be the test. Like my parents were part of a church a while back that was looking for a pastor, and it was like they were just talking about the frustration of trying to find a pastor or whatever. And I just thought to myself, it's like, I tell you, the interview ought to be like, what's the last thing God said to you?
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't light up and they don't, they don't get, you don't walk into a big conversation.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's find the next guy.
Can I tell you a real conversation that happened with me on a search committee? Like I was a youth pastor and was at a search committee, and wonderful people, like really, I mean, but I feel like they missed the boat on the interview process. In fact, when the interview was over, they're like, okay, you know, does anybody have anything else? Where I was like, well, I've got a few questions for you guys. Like, I turned the interview back to them and wanted to know where their heart was at, where youth was on their priority, you know, because a lot of churches, you know, unfortunately look at that as like a babysitter job.
Right.
But they asked me financial questions. They asked me questions like, what if you really felt led to do something, but the pastor, you know, didn't want you to do it? What if, you know, all these earthly scenarios. And I didn't think about it at the time, but I got to thinking about it later. It's like, they didn't ask me about my devotional life. What am I reading?
Mm.
They didn't ask me, how's your relationship with God? How's your relationship with your wife?
Right.
And my kids were young at the time. It's like, how's your relationship with your kids? Like, how do you like being a dad? It was all practical church minutiae business.
Right.
How would you behave, you know, in these situations? What if a youth parent came up and said this? Like, it was never anything about my spiritual life.
Right.
It was like, I could have, I mean, now I was referenced, you know, somebody gave me a reference of like, hey, you need to get with this guy. So, I mean, I came with someone within that church that knew of me.
Right.
I went to seminary with, hey, we're looking for a youth pastor. I know a guy. So give a little bit of a pass on that I came with a recommendation. But, you know, I got to thinking back later, like how, like I'm going in here to minister to their kids, their grandkids, you know, if there was a grandparent on there. It's like, they didn't ask anything,
mm-hmm.
you know, about my personal
yeah.
spiritual life. And maybe that was just an assumption again, because it was a recommendation. Like I said, wonderful people. I wound up taking the job, but I thought about that even months later. It's like, you know, didn't even ask.
Yeah.
You know, could have been even a believer.
Well, that's kind of dangerous.
Oh, super dangerous.
You know, I mean, who are you getting in there?
Yeah. And you're placing somebody in a vulnerable, like with kids.
Right.
You know, I mean, you don't know. Unfortunately, in the world we live, that's one of the number one places that people with ill intent go is because mm-hmm. they know churches need volunteer workers,
right.
And stuff. So, but yeah, you're going to love this. So, the providing the buffalo hunter, but listen to this. It says, cooks love the trail. They keep the pioneers on their toes, and they take the meat the buffalo hunter provides and adds his own spices, rings the bell, you know, the old, hey, dinner's ready, and serves the food.
Yeah.
Really, that's the job.
Right.
Like, you're a cook, man. You're nothing. And so I think, and it's not a false humility, but when, you know, my brother that asked a couple of weeks ago, like, why don't you like being called pastor, Scott? Because I'm a cook. You know, I get it. I know that, like, it's this weird thing. It's like, I fully embrace that, yes, I've been called to pastor. And I embrace that role. But at the same time, it's like, I don't want, especially in our situation, you know, where we've got people, and I don't mind saying this because I've said it ad nauseum and will every week to our people that come through that gate in our parking lot. We already have a lot of people that feel like they don't belong. They mm-hmm. don't measure up because they're nothing but a you fill in the blank, whatever.
Yeah.
Like we've had that before.
Yeah.
And so to me, to come in with this, one, I don't have that view of myself, period. And I know you don't as well. I don't have an elevated view of my position.
Mm-hmm.
Like I really am just like that addict that comes in off the street. It's maybe wrapped in a different package,
mm-hmm.
but I don't want that elevation of feeling as if like, I'm sorry. Like, and this is no offense to our Catholic brothers and sisters, because I've got some great ones that are true believers, but how they put the emphasis on a priest and the Pope and all that. It's like, they're just men.
Mm-hmm.
They're just people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that mindset of then taking, if you're a pastor and you take that as like, dude, I'm a cook.
Mm-hmm.
The meat's already there. Like he's provided that already. He'll reveal new things. Not that's in contradiction. I want to be sure, like, I believe when God continues to speak in His Holy Spirit, He's not going to contradict His word and say, "Yeah, you need to go murder that person." Like, mm-hmm. obviously, it's not going to. That's not from God, right? He's not going to contradict what's already there. But He, like, what a sad view if you think He quit speaking in Revelation.
Yeah,
you know. Yeah. And so He continues to speak. We don't often get that right, or we don't always get that right. Hopefully, often we do, but we don't always get that right. But at the same time, if you could, as a pastor, take the thing of like, hey, I'm really not in charge of this thing. Like, yeah, there's some responsibility, there's leadership, all that. I'm not trying to diminish. But ultimately, God's got this family.
Yes.
I'm the cook that brings the meat. That's all I do.
Well,
you know?
And this is, and I will say, one of the reasons why I don't just take a random call to come lead worship. First of all, I don't get a lot of those. Mm-hmm. But I do get them. I actually got one a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And I just flat out said, I can't do it. Mm-hmm. And this was
just to go do like a one.
This is
thing?
A one and okay. done kind of deal.
Yeah. If you're out there and you try to come take Jesse Crow from us, I swear to Christ. I'm kidding.
If somebody Maybe. Calls and wants a one and done, hey, come lead worship at our church, I'm going to say no.
Yeah.
And I can tell you why.
I'm talking about the weekly. If they try to take
no,
I swear to Christ. I swear to Christ. I'm going to come with these calluses and I'm coming from down under. No, I'm kidding. No. We joke about that, but Jesse and I both have said this. We've said it to other people at our place. If God is leading you somewhere else, like, we want you to go there.
Yeah,
you
know? Absolutely.
We just pray that God's not ever going to do that.
But
anyway.
One of the reasons, and what this circles back to what you're saying, is because I believe, and John Eldridge has talked a lot about this. I know we talk a lot about him, mm-hmm. but I believe that there is a demonic religious spirit at work in churches.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. And I think I don't have the capacity nor the authority walking into your church to break through that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a waste of my time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I hope that's not true at your place, but I can tell you there's some things. Whenever you have people that are saying some of these things, like, we've never done it that way before, or when you follow the leading of the Spirit and you have people that get angry, when you have people that even try and get you moved out when you're trying to follow the voice of God, whether you're a pastor, whether you're a small group leader, whatever, I can just about guarantee you that religious spirit, and I'm telling you, that religious spirit in our world today is crippling the church. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely crippling it.
Yeah.
If you're sitting in a church and it feels stale and it feels like, what are we doing? And it feels like, everybody's just following the motions and we're not reaching out and we're not having conversations about what God is doing, I can just about guarantee you that religious spirit has infested your church.
Well, I want to say that, and I'll be very careful because the church that this happened, I actually very much respect and love and know some of the people from it. But you may remember Roger and I were set to speak event at a church, and basically I made the joke like the movie Friday. I know you don't typically come to a Christian podcast to talk about an Ice Cube movie, but hey, that's just who we are. But I said, they took the gig away from us before, and I mean, we're volunteering, like, we didn't ask for any kind of pay or whatever, and we got fired from it. And I was like, I made the joke about Fridays, like, how the heck do we get fired on our day off? You know, it's like we didn't even do anything. But sentiment came back of, I tell you, you know, the person that was connected to it just said, I'll tell you what I think it is. I feel like they think you're too dangerous to come. And I took that almost as a badge of honor, of the sense that I kind of felt like they were talking is that we were coming in with very free hearts into possibly a religious, you know, at least environment in that.
Right.
And it was a men's event.
Yeah.
You know, and so, like, to gather a bunch of men and be like, you can't really be free here to be you.
That's sad.
Yeah, counterproductive.
Yeah.
But again, I love that place. So if anybody's, you know, that knows me, that's listening, that puts that together, I'm not bashing dear people. And that may not be the reason. That's what we were told. And so we definitely have encountered that. And there is, I mean, there I'll tell you this, if you ever consider me or Jesse, there is no telling what we may say. But I know this, we're going to say it with the heart of God leading. And yeah, our flesh gets in the way sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just, again, reiterates the point. We're cooks.
Yeah. We're going to over-season from time to time.
quite a bit. So he continues on. He says, this, you know, spices, rings a bell, serves the food. But to make the pioneers think more on what they're eating. That's the job of the cook. Takes pride in seeing the fellow pioneers well fed.
Yeah.
Man, I want to tell you, like,
yeah.
I know dead air is not good, but this last series that we did at Southside, the 23rd Psalm, I'm not bringing that. I think you know my heart, Jesse, and hopefully absolutely, listeners do. Yeah. It's like, it's not like, oh, Keith did such a good job.
You ain't got to qualify it, man.
God did a work through that series.
Absolutely.
To where, I mean, and you may be out there and do this to your pastor, and it's fine. Like, you get the same people every week coming, man, you did a good job.
Mm.
It's habit.
Yeah.
You know, I know some truly believe that. You very rarely get the ones that come up and tell you you sucked, but, you know, there's those out there too. They just, you know, are nice enough not to say it to your
face. Yeah, yeah.
They just talk about it at lunch. Boy, what the heck was he talking about? But this one, people reached out in various ways, text message, calls, messenger on Facebook, and just were like, man, God told me this.
Mm.
And dude, like, when I think about this line where it says he takes pride in seeing the fellow pioneers well fed.
Yeah.
That just got all over me this last series.
Yeah.
Because that whole passage is talking about the good shepherd who lays down his life, and David confidently, you know, saying the Lord is my shepherd, like making it this personal thing. And like, it's been so rich for me personally. But to see people well fed, it makes the hard parts of that job, because there's a lot of hard parts in what we do, like the heartache, the brokenness, the just wanting to fix every little situation. And it's like, we can only do so much.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, we turn people away on certain needs. It's mm-hmm. like, listen, we're doing all we can.
Yeah.
You know, a small group of people that comes together that never passes a plate, but God always provides,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like, but there's a limit to what we can do. And let's be honest, sometimes throwing money at something does not fix the problem.
Right.
You know, like we typically think, that's the easy way, is to stroke a check.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the difficult part is to walk with somebody and say, no, okay, now why are we back in this spot?
Yeah.
You know, what's going on? Is there something deeper? You know, all of those questions. But to get back to the point, when I see people, not just your casual, hey, that was a good message or whatever, but genuinely say, and I love the caveat of not like, Keith, when you said this, like, that's okay too, but to hear them say, God told me.
Mm.
And it may not even be something that I said, but it was this route that you could tell they went off an exit ramp and met with God in that parking lot and probably even didn't hear the rest of the stuff I said.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Like that is like, that's seeing a fellow pioneer well fed and like something they can take for the week and maybe the rest of their life, you know, if God really takes root in that. And so I really resonate with that line, but it says, takes pride in seeing the fellow pioneers well fed. If they grumble, they grumble.
Yeah.
Like, man, if you could be the cook in that situation, you know what? Every meal that you prepare is not going to be for everybody.
Right.
Like you're not going out there to impress.
Yeah.
You know, man. And I know, God, I know, like I got a situation coming up that I was invited to go in. I won't get into details, but like that first thought is like, man, that's a, and I think you know what I'm talking about. The text I sent you guys this morning, it's a very holy and sacred, like special moment, like in a very difficult spot in somebody's life that I've been invited into based on some of my story. And that first thought's like, you can't mess that up. Dude, it ain't my job.
Right.
Like the meat's out there.
Yeah.
I just listen to him.
Right.
Season it up
yeah,
best I can, or wherever he leads me to do, and then dish it out, and the people that need to hear it will hear it.
Well, and what's, and I would encourage anybody, and I can say this, you might not be comfortable with that, but I will say this, go back to Church at Southside, our YouTube, Facebook, and listen to the Psalm 23 series, mm-hmm. because I know for me, I've told you, like, we've had conversations about this, I'm at a point in my life where I have to reorient myself mm-hmm. with God the Shepherd.
Yeah,
I have to be shepherded by Him. I'm at a sort of a confusing place in my life. I'm at a place where I can't trust myself instinctually all the time. Mm-hmm. I've got, you know, I've told you things that I felt, oh, maybe God's saying this, and it come, oh well, no, He's not really.
Yeah,
and it's like there's this place where I've got to come back to, okay, what is the shepherd? How is the shepherd leading me?
Mm-hmm.
And it comes back to this, like it's Christ has to be the head of this. Mm-hmm. He has to be the head of it.
Yeah.
And if you're trusting your own wit, your own education, mm-hmm. your own, artistry as far as your speaking ability and all, if you're trusting in those things, it's just fluff, man. Mm-hmm. It's not sustain. It doesn't sustain people long term. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. I mean, it might make them feel good, and they might admire the way you told a story or you said something. But if you're not in that kitchen slinging it, man, like listening to the Spirit of God, preparing what He's given you to give to people, mm-hmm. dude, you're just. I mean, yeah. It's not kingdom.
Yeah.
And you know.
Well, and I want to go off of that and say this, one of my probably all-time biggest pet peeves in ministry is to hear these words, and I've heard it of our place, and I like literally correct the people on the spot, and I do so not like nicely. I'm not trying to be a jerk out there or whatever, but like the statement, and I'll just use me in the context that it's been said, we're gonna go out to Pastor Keith's church. No, dude, I didn't die for that church.
Yeah.
You know, it's not Keith's church. And so, like, if you attach a pastor's name, that's Pastor So-and-so's church, especially like, and I hate this, but like, everybody will know what I'm talking about, a famous pastor. Well, that's So-and-so's church. That's the church of Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
He is the only one that bought and paid for that with a precious price.
Right.
That pastor, yes, has been put in authority to shepherd, you know, for the time being, again, to point to the shepherd, but that's not their church.
Right.
Like, if I die today, I pray I don't, but the church at Southside, I feel, will still go on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not me. It's right. Not like, hopefully I missed for a week or two. It's kind of like the joke I had with Jamie. It's like, if I die, I want you to remarry. It's like, just do me a favor and don't bring the old boy to the funeral. You know, like, let me cool off a bit. But, you know, like, yeah, you'd hope you'd be missed.
Right.
But at the same time, like the work's bigger, you know, than any person. So he continues on. He says, the church, the gathering, they feast together weekly, and they gather as a family meal united in purpose. And I wrote in parentheses on my note, we really do that. We gather as mm-hmm. a family meal every week.
Mm-hmm.
But that vision of cooking, and it says it renews strength and vision for the week and the road, the trail ahead.
Right.
That's what it's for. Every new day brings new trails to blaze. And that took me to our buddy, Stephen Curtis Chapman. A great adventure.
Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, got a trail to blaze.
Yeah.
But I love this too. If you're a cook, if you're a pastor, shouldn't mind working behind the scenes as well.
Oh man.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many times I've seen pastors. It's like they let everybody else do the dirty work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so you're cooking, you're preparing that, all that. That's not your only job.
Yeah.
You know, as a shepherd, like,
do I need to retell the story about when you impressed me the most?
You can. Yeah.
So
I wish it took a lot less, but
this is, like, we're 4 or 5 years into this, maybe. We're still at Intermark.
Yeah.
and parking lot at Intermark, and we had who we think we know, who's no longer with us. He actually passed away, sadly enough. Can I say his name?
Sure.
Now he's
He's not going to complain.
JoJo.
Yeah.
Who is a, old JoJo, man. He was a precious dude.
Yeah.
But we had just served a great meal, and JoJo slipped around the corner, and right in the entrance of this business, who is kind enough to allow us to use their parking lot, he used the restroom.
Yeah.
And it was not number one.
Yeah. Number dose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, well, one of our volunteers or somebody noticed it and came around there and kind of whispered to somebody and said, hey, you know, there's a situation.
We got a fecal matter over here.
So me and you walk over there. You had an igloo cooler with water. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, we're going to have to. And I don't want to get in the detail of what it looked like,
don't.
But it was not an easy cleanup. Okay. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm going to go with him. I'm going to help. And I get over there and I see it and I start going, whoop. And you had rubber gloves on.
Yeah.
And you cleaned.
Double layered
rubber gloves on. And you cleaned that up. And I just remember going, it was just a holy moment. Yeah. I know that as stupid as that sounds, it just was. Yeah. And I texted you later. Like, I was literally thinking about that and I teared up.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, that's. I think you've never impressed me more than that moment.
It was holy, all right. You add something else at the end of that, holy something. But is that an appropriate place to use that term, holy, you know?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe. Anyway, yeah. I hope there's easier ways to show God's calling than that down the road. But anyway. I think, too, one thing to bring about, like how much we believe in this. So, when we started the church at Southside, first it was just a gathering at our home. We didn't know that it was going to be anything official. When we voted to do that, there's the typical thing of like, you know, obviously I was feeling a calling to be a pastor at this point in my life. And, there's that push to, you know, be the man and make the decisions and all that. And when we were in those initial talks, I said, you know, I feel called to do it. And under one condition is that we have a leadership team and we sit at a table, either, you know, virtually, like how we'll text and do, you know, make some decisions that way or call or in person. But either way, sit at a table and I'm one vote at the table. Like, I don't feel as I should, nor do I want authority.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like if I'm transparent, that's come back to bite me a few times on stuff that I've wanted to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the COVID situation always comes to mind and
right.
You were the one that's like, dude, you said, you know, you want to be one. And I was like vehemently thinking in one way. And it's like, everybody was kind of pushing pause there for a little bit. And it's like, you know, I came to you. It's like, you're right. You know? And I didn't get my way, you know, in that situation. And I think that was one of the best things that could have happened to reinforce that in my mind of like, okay, this is the way, you know, you felt led to set it up. Like, I'm one vote, which means I don't always get my way.
Right.
If you're a pastor, I won't even put your pastor out there. If you are a pastor and listening to this and you are the end all be all guy, I would say be very careful.
Mm.
Like, put some guardrails, put some leadership in there, be that deacons, elders. Ours is a team made up of men and women. That's just our personal preference. It doesn't mean that we don't have deacons. I think we do. We just don't have official,
right,
you know, terms of that.
Yeah.
But to sit down and have one other perspective that you're not always going to think.
I'll tell you who our one deacon is.
Who's that?
Jason.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Jason, longest running friend of mine that I've known.
He would never he would get mad at me saying that.
Oh yeah,
but he is. Yeah. He absolutely is. He does more for us.
A lot behind the scenes. Yeah.
And he's a super cool dude and
runs our truck.
Yeah, I mean,
and whether he ever believes it or not, he is the one that I met years ago, years before even church at Southside was a thing, that I just knew something special was about him. And I've told him many times, like, dude, you're one of the reasons God has us out here. Like,
right.
he drew you know, my heart to yours very, very early on.
Right.
First night I met him.
Yeah.
He gave me the best chair at camp and wouldn't wouldn't take no for an answer. Like, he's over there sitting on like a, I think it was like a milk crate.
One of those. And can I just tell you, if Jason ever offers to cook you anything, say yes.
Yeah.
But if he ever offers to cook you fried green tomatoes.
Yeah. I was jealous, man.
Dude, that's
one of my favorites.
He is an amazing cook.
Yeah.
An amazing cook. Anyway. Yeah.
Speaking of cooks.
Speaking of cooks. Yeah. He's living it out for sure.
That's right. Well, to close this out, we've got.
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah.
I just want to say one more thing because I think this is important, and I've been kind of figuring out a way to work this in. One thing that I'm using these names again. You and Mike and Joseph. You know, these are the people that I have worked with and stuff. Mm-hmm. The thing that I think sets y'all apart from me. You ever heard of the saying, like, you know that someone needs to lead when they don't feel comfortable with leading or qualified to lead?
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the best leaders are ones who don't think they're the leader.
Right.
But they lead by example, and they end up doing those things. One of the things that's always impressed me about you and about those other two guys I mentioned is they're always looking for someone to bring in mm-hmm. to the kitchen.
Mm.
You know, they're always looking for somebody to, hey, man, grab that pan and throw that on the grill and get that. But, hey, this is how you do that. Because, mm-hmm. I remember in the early days of my time as ministry, Joel always had a heart to train younger pastors.
Mm-hmm.
And he was always given opportunities. I got a list of guys, four or five guys now to come to my mind that they would come and say, hey, I think I want to preach. And they go, okay, what are you doing next Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
And he would get them up there and stuff.
Yeah.
And how open you have been with our church, even like when people come up mm-hmm. the day of and say, I have a word to share. Mm-hmm. And you hand them the mic and go, okay, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't want, no, if you got, God's got a word, you share it.
Yeah.
It's like, you think about that, like, that's in the institutional church, the mm-hmm. settler mindset. That's so dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
That's so dangerous. But when a church is led by Christ, mm-hmm. when Christ is the head of it, it's got to be that dangerous.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's like, and it's not that you don't use discernment, right? Like, you know, I know there are people out there I'm thinking about right now that would come up and you'd be like, nope.
Yeah.
Not yeah. happening.
Yeah.
But like, man, there's something incredible about that, that always brings us back to, no, Jesus is going to lead this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always going to hold loosely to the reins.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I've got to be able to step aside and let, hey man, I have this recipe mm-hmm. that I've been thinking about
yeah.
and I've got, can I cook today? Can yeah. I serve up today? You know, that's something I've just kept thinking about because it's like if you have a pastor who's so narcissistic that he won't let anybody else on that behind that pulpit or on that mm-hmm. stage or in front of people, whatever that looks like for you,
mm-hmm.
again, be careful.
Yeah.
Be leery of that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, they don't have the market cornered on the word from God for sure. Because
right.
I can tell you, one of our best messages ever preached out there was our buddy James that came. He showed up in the suit and tie that day.
Oh, yes. And, yeah, I totally forgot about that.
I told him forever. I was like, dude, he'd come up and share things with me after. I was like, you need to share that out here one day. He's like, I might do it one day. Well, he shows up, and he's got on a suit and tie. You know, used to live a life on the street and addict. I mean, he shared it. It's all stuff you could go back and watch on our church at Southside YouTube. James Mickey was his name. But he's gotten clean, gotten a job, you know, off the street, all this stuff. You know, just a great, great story. And he credits all that to Christ. It's not us.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think he's serving at another.
He is, yeah.
Another
yeah,
place, another yeah. church of some form.
Yeah, I think it's the place where he went through addiction, like right. counseling, like he's helping with others. And so I kept telling him, it's like, man, you need to, well, he shows up in that suit and tie, had the biggest smile on his face, and he walks up to me, and he I never will forget this day. He said, were you serious? And I said, what do you mean? I didn't know what he was talking about. He says, were you serious that I could share out here one day? I was like, yeah, man, is today the day? And he said, today's the day. And I asked him, I said, now I'm prepared. Like, I mean, because he just shows up, you know. I said, do you want to, like, you know, top onto mine? Or I said, are you wanting to take the whole? He said, I think I can do the whole thing. I said, brother, go. Yeah. One of the best messages ever preached out there.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it was, I stood back there just so proud and like weeping.
Right.
Like, I mean, man, just chills, you know, right now. Just, it's a beautiful thing to see people, you know, feel valued in that and share. And he came from a place that I really couldn't come from to our people, you know, and I think it just resonated. And, I'll say that till my dying day. That's one of the best ones out there for sure. But that's this week. So a couple more chapters in this short series that we've done. I know we get into doctrines, and then we talk about the settler Christian versus the pioneer believer to close out. So a couple more, and then maybe we'll hit you with that episode of some of our antics on the road and things that we've encountered. I know we've got some good stories for that. So
yeah,
we appreciate you guys joining us and look forward to being back with you next time, and hopefully it won't be as long in between, but we've enjoyed talking today. So love you guys, and we'll talk to you next time.